Welcome back to the 113th episode of the Religious Studies Project. I'm one of your hosts, David Robertson.
I'm another one of your hosts, Christopher Carter.
And this week, it's my pleasure to introduce an interview that my associate Christopher Carter here recorded recently with Gladys Gagnon on the subject of the Emerging Church. And to find out just what the Emerging Church is, here's Chris.
Wow, that was like Radio 2 or something. That never happened.
Yeah. Welcome to the Religious Studies Project. I am still in Belfast, and listeners will probably be confused by what's happening with my accent, because I normally don't have much of a Irish accent, but it comes back when I am surrounded by the natives, as it were. I'm at the Irish School of Ecumenics today with... I should have checked the pronunciation of your surname. Is it
Gagnon?
Gagnon. Yeah. Like Daniel.
Exactly.
Perfect. So I'm here with Dr. Gladys Gagnon. He's a lecturer and program coordinator of the Masters in Conflict Resolution and Reconciliation at Trinity College Dublin at Belfast, which is also the Irish School of Ecumenics. She's the author of Evangelicalism and Conflict in Northern Ireland, and co-author with Claire Mitchell of Evangelical Journeys, Choice and Change in a Northern Irish Religious Subculture. But today, we're going to be talking about a phenomenon which I was largely unfamiliar with, the Emerging Church. We can problematize that title in a minute. This is due to the recent publication of a co-authored book that Gladys has written with Gerardo Marti, The Deconstructed Church, Understanding Emerging Christianity, which was published by OUP just a few months ago. It's 2014, it's got on it. So first off, Gladys, welcome to the Religious Studies Project.
Thank you.
The Emerging Church. I said that we could problematize that title there. But before we get into problematizing it, if you could just give me a sort of very brief, what are we talking about here? Because I had not heard of it until I picked up this book, but now I feel like, you know, I'm a world expert.
That's it. Well, I suppose the Emerging Church, nearly your worst nightmare is to be asked to define it, because yeah. It's, I suppose it's a phenomenon that the participants who take part in it really try to resist definition, and that, of course, makes it difficult for the academic researcher to describe and define the Emerging Church movement. So recently, I suppose, I gave a talk on which I put up a blank slide for the definition of the Emerging Church to sort of try to capture this ambiguity and slipperiness around describing and defining the phenomenon. But of course, as academics, Gerardo and I, you know, that's part of the task of sort of defining and describing the Emerging Church movement. And the way we go about it, I suppose, in some ways, we sort of describe movements or phenomena or expressions of Christianity that we consider to be part of the Emerging Church. So things like the neo-monastic movement in the UK, mm-hmm. the Fresh Expressions movement within the Anglican and Methodist churches within the US, particularly, and also in the UK and Ireland, so the pub church phenomenon, the kind of networks and conferences associated with, say, Emergent Village in the US. We say all these types of things, they're part of this amorphous Emerging Church movement. And then we try to put, I suppose, a bit more structure and sociological bones on it after the description. And the term we use in the book, we talk about it as being a religious orientation rather than a religious identity or a religious identification. And this idea of using the term orientation is, I suppose, we wanted to capture some of the fluidity that we think by using a term like identity or identification puts people too much into boxes. The orientation allows us to describe the people who are involved in these various expressions in a more unified way. And what's part of the orientation, I suppose, is a tension in, of holding what to us seems a very individualistic approach yes. to Christianity. Of so it's about, in some ways, self-discovery and critique and personal experience. So this individualistic held intention with a collective, because the idea of community is also very important to people within the emerging church movement. So an orientation that's simultaneously individualistic and communal, in which everybody we interview talks about this as an ideal. And also within this orientation, there are things like a commitment to conversation. This is what they would describe, not, say, signing up to particular doctrines or beliefs, but having a conversation about doctrine and belief. So there's this idea of dialogue and diversity mm-hmm. as an inherent good within the movement. That's part of the orientation. And then also part of the orientation would be sort of a coalescing around some, and we wouldn't even want to say key beliefs about things, but I suppose different approaches to, say, the nature of truth, the nature of God, doubt as being seen as a necessary component of faith, as it were, and also, I suppose, a strong critique of institutional religion and a very deliberate attempt to be anti-institutional in the way they practice their faith. Now, that was a fairly long definition, so you can see why we hesitate to define and describe, but hopefully that sheds some light.
Yeah, and there's so much in there that we could pick up on. I guess just one thing just to mention is that it seems to be that you have Protestant members of the emerging church, you have Catholic members of the emerging church, you have people who are, they're also members of, you know, that they're members of existing institutions who then also gather in these sort of emergent congregations as well, whilst also having people who may be atheist or agnostic who participate. So it's the whole book felt quite familiar and alien at the same time. And I was reading it, and there was one point where you and Gerardo mention a communion service happening with champagne and chocolate cake and things like that, which just perfectly illustrated the sort of familiar but alien sort of elements of it. I guess now that we sort of have a broad idea of what we're talking about, if you could tell me a little bit about how you got interested in it, how you ended up researching it, and then how you go about researching it, because when you're talking about such a vast amorphous thing that's existing within existing institutions but also has its own expression, it could be very difficult to work out how to even approach it. So perhaps your personal journey in a sense could help.
Well, I suppose for me personally, it started when I was doing my PhD many years ago, right? Not that old. But my PhD was on evangelicalism and conflict in Northern Ireland. So in doing that research, some of the evangelicals I spoke with who were involved in, I suppose, peace and reconciliation work were also involved with a couple organizations called 028 and Icon. Now, 028 doesn't exist anymore, but it probably was a sort of more proper sociological type organization. You know, and that had a very much social activist bent and putting almost like Sojourners or in the States or something like Tony Campolo would be into that type of orientation, I suppose. And the people in 028, quite a few were also involved in this more amorphous collective, as it were, called Icon.
Right.
And Icon, I came to discover, was something quite different. They weren't, I suppose, evangelicals. I think in the book that came out of my PhD, I called the people involved in Icon post-evangelical. Mm. So sharing a lot of, say, the characteristics of people in the UK that Dave Tomlinson would have wrote about in that book, you know, the post-evangelical. So Icon describes itself, I suppose, as a transformance arts collective. And right. At the time I was doing my PhD, they met once a month in the Menagerie Bar in Belfast and sort of created an event that, I suppose, the point wasn't to provoke a response of worship. It was to provoke a response of questioning and thinking and grappling with ideas such as doubt and, you know, what does it mean to be a Christian in a place maybe like Northern Ireland where faith has played a maybe destructive role in some cases. So it's kind of the issues that were bubbling up for the people involved were kind of expressed through these transformance art performances in the pub, as it were. So, I mean, that was sort of interesting in and of itself. For the PhD, I kind of, you know, Icon was mentioned briefly, but the main focus was on evangelicalism. But after the PhD, a few years later, Peter Rollins, who was one of the main founders mm-hmm. of ICON and would now be one of the, I suppose, main authors or leaders, as I wouldn't, I'd hesitate to use that word within the context of emerging church, but popular figures maybe in the international movement. Peter Rollins organized a conference here in Belfast, and Gerardo came over for that conference. And he had been reading some of Pete's stuff and was quite interested in the extent that, I suppose, I think Pete's work is a bit more radical and pushes the boundaries more than maybe some of the popular figures in the US. So we had these long conversations where I was trying to, I suppose, interpret Peter Rollins and ICON and where they fit into the wider, the emerging church movement with Gerardo. And before he left, he said, we should write a book about this, you know? So I was like, sure, why not? that's, I suppose, how it came about. In terms of the difficulty of studying the emerging church, I mean, because it's so difficult to pin down mm-hmm. and define, you need a bit of insider knowledge to be able to identify the relevant groups and people and figures who could be associated with it. So while maybe on the outside, someone like Brian McLaren in the States, someone who's not heard of the emerging church would assume he's some sort of liberal evangelical or something like this, whereas really he's much more plugged into these, you know, wider international conversations that can be captured under this umbrella term, the emerging church movement. Myself in the book, I focused mainly on Northern Ireland and the UK.
Yeah.
And because I had the contacts and ICON did, you know, quite a lot of observation of that particular group, and also brought in some of the main UK authors like Kester Bruin and so forth. And again, I think sometimes Bruin and Rollins, they push the conversation a slightly different way than the American popular figures. So that created some interesting synergies, hopefully, in the book. Yeah.
Just have to mention that every time I hear Rollins, I'm always thinking of Henry Rollins, metal guy who does Sunday sermons and things like that at metal festivals, which are... But I know that is not... Maybe he's part of the emerging church. Before we get into more specifics, I don't know if this was sort of a result of you being based in Ireland and the UK and Gerardo being based in the US, but is it quite an Anglophone movement? Or are you aware of non-Anglophone expression, or was that just sort of the result of your focus?
Well, I would say it's primarily Western. And we do know of, I suppose, sort of collectives and groups, you know, in France or in Germany and in places like this. But numerically, our hunch, I would say, is probably that it's primarily Anglophone, primarily Western, and then if you're going to push me in that direction, maybe primarily Anglophone as well. There's significant communities in Australia and Canada and so on and so forth. And I mean, I suppose perhaps one of the primary reasons behind this is its roots in Protestant evangelicalism. Mm. So while you mentioned at the beginning, there's people from all over the spectrum involved in it now. I think the historical development does show that it started as a critique of Protestant evangelicalism. So Protestant evangelicalism in its sort of Anglophone forms, really, the critiques of that is where a lot of the energy came from. But and having said that, though, I mean, since the book has come out, we've had a couple inquiries here and there from people in Europe who are saying, you know, this is giving a language to some of the stuff that we see here on the ground in our country or and so on and so forth. But also, I mean, I suppose, especially in the United States, because secularization hasn't happened in quite the same way as Europe, there's also maybe a bit more energy for this type of critique and reform than you would get on the European continent as well. Yeah.
You've given me the perfect way to the word critique there. in fact, well, your book's titled The Deconstructed Church. I was going to say The Deconstructing Church, Deconstructed. And that, for me, would seem to be almost the key characteristic of this movement, in quotation marks. So maybe if you could tell us a bit more about how a movement can exist that is constantly sort of critiquing and deconstructing. It sounds on the surface that that would be sort of self-defeating in a sense.
Well, I mean, I suppose a lot of the, especially the popular leaders, and I've done it again, the popular figures within the movement would see it as a postmodern form of Christianity. So they very much set the movement or the conversation, as they might prefer to call it, within postmodernism. So for them, part of postmodernism is deconstructing what has gone before. And they see modern religion as, you know, not suited for this postmodern era that we're in. Mm. So in terms of, say, modern religion kind of cast as a form of religion that's been influenced by the Enlightenment, is supposed to be rational in some ways, perhaps, is supposed to include sort of doctrines or a set of beliefs that you can sign up to, is looked, you know, might involve in some cases reading the Bible like a textbook. You know, they see all that as forms of modern religion that they're critiquing and not suitable for a postmodern era where things like narrative and story and community and relationship and all those types of aspects of religion are foregrounded and seen as more important. So the postmodern deconstructed bit comes to some extent from the participants themselves within the movement. In terms of something else that we think is important in terms of deconstructed in the critique of institutions, and you alluded a little bit to this, I think, in your question, is the anti-institutional nature of the emerging church. So quite deliberately, these people do not want to create religious institutions. They don't want to create denominations. Their worst nightmare would be for their expression of Christianity to become institutionalized.
Mm.
So, I mean, this obviously creates problems in some ways for scholars of religion, where you're accustomed perhaps to measuring or evaluating the success of a religious movement in terms of adherence and growth and the number of people who go to church. Whereas you get, like Pete Rollins talking about starting a pop-up church that lasts for a year, where people go through some issues together and discuss and critique Christianity and then abandon the church very deliberately after a year together, and that is seen as a success. But if you're measuring success of religion in terms of adherence and growth, you know, what do you do with that? So I suppose there's a deconstruction then of the very idea of what constitutes successful Christianity, and this attempt to be deliberately anti-institutional. And of course, I mean, the question of whether this is ultimately sustainable in the long term, a form of religion that, you know, deliberately tries to do itself out of business in the conventional ways and some, to some extent, is debatable, but also very interesting.
Yeah. I should mention for listeners that the book is incredibly rich in terms of, you know, ethnographic detail and accounts of, I'll use the word insiders, but, you know, it's really rich in that sort of detail, and that probably won't come across in the interview because we don't have time to get into specifics too much. But because I'm aware, I'm now going to move maybe away from it a bit more and say that's one way that you've just mentioned there, that the emerging church can sort of problematize standard academic notions of what a religion is, or what is religion, or what is religious. So I'm wondering if in other ways, you know, so it's this sort of deconstructing, institutionalizing, I think you use an
institutionalizing structure, I think we say at one point.
In what other ways, just off the top of your head, does it help problematize our notions of what religion is, or even what Christianity is? I guess there's two different things there.
Okay, so the question is, in what ways does the emerging church problematize what Christianity is and what religion is? Well, I mean, I suppose in terms of for Christianity, and this one maybe not be so much for scholars of religion who are, you know, aware of the pluralism that exists within religions anyway. But one thing I think that's important about the emerging church movement in terms of its wider interaction with other expressions of Christianity is kind of exposing this pluralism within Christianity that I think institutions try to minimize or hide, perhaps. So in the book, we talk about pluralist congregations that are very much deliberately pluralist in terms of using aspects from a variety of Christian traditions, whether it's Catholicism or Orthodox or the monastic traditions, or you know, even evangelical Protestantism, for goodness sakes. So very deliberately exposing the pluralism and, you know, I suppose using that as a resource. So that, I think, is, you know, a challenge to the institutional Christianities that have developed in the modern West, as it were. In terms of the emerging church as being, the second part of the question was a challenge to religion itself. I mean, I suppose another way to think about that is the individualistic aspect of it, maybe. Maybe come back and talk a little bit about that. Because I suppose when we interviewed and talked to people, so much of what happens within the emerging church is it facilitates people's spiritual journey, as it were. I think at one point we say something along the lines of the emerging church movement is almost the perfect expression of Christianity for people who are spiritual but not religious. So you, to use that well-worn term, it facilitates an individualistic type of spirituality that you're maybe not necessarily going to get in other forms of conventional religion, as it were. So in that sense, maybe it's a challenge to the more conforming work of institutions, and I guess maybe provides a window on how individualism can be nurtured within a collective setting.
Which is sort of that constant tension in the modern world. Now, there are a number of directions I could go, and I'm aware that we've only got about 10 minutes left, so I'm just trying to work out. I guess a fundamental question for me is what makes it Christianity in a sense? Is there a certain, because it seems so diverse, there's so many, what is the sort of minimal thing that, you know, helps it be attached to Christianity? I'm assuming it's probably something to do with the figure of Christ or whatever, but, you know, like, you know, what's...
Well, people within the emerging church would really hate that question, I think. So what makes it a Christian, as it were? Gosh, I would almost say that the best way to try to answer that question would be to think maybe in terms of a spectrum. And I think for me, a lot of the figures and groups in the United States would probably be much more comfortable with talking about some sort of, and I hesitate even to use the word unifying, but some sort of unifying orientation around the figure of Christ. Okay, so seeing Christ's life on earth, his embodiment of truth and just living and so on and so forth, that I think quite a few in the American movement maybe would be comfortable enough with going somewhat in that direction. Of course, because I'm the one based in Northern Ireland and I've done so much of the work on ICON, I think they would be less comfortable with even talking in those terms. And it's quite hard to, you know, pin people down when you're having these sorts of conversations. So there's a particular example. I can't even remember if this one made it into the book or not, or if I'm just remembering from field notes. But there was a conversation with some people at ICON one year at the Greenbelt Festival, and I think they were asked, you know, is ICON Christian? And one of them answered, well, of course ICON isn't Christian. We don't feed the poor and look after orphans and widows. And if you don't do that, you're not a Christian either, you know? So these types of responses, you know, this is what you'll get from people who are involved in the emerging church. So kind of frustratingly, but, you know, for the researcher, you know, they don't see it as dodging the question. They see it as not even the relevant question. And I have some sympathy with that view, that they don't see that as the relevant question. For them, the relevant question is what you consider your faith. Is it helping you to live more justly in the real world, as it were? And if the figure of Christ inspires you and helps you to do that, why not?
Another question would surround other, in quotation, other religions. Now, I certainly gathered from the book that there was a very, let's say, tolerant ethos and idea of, you know, learning from other people and not maybe trying to convert people in the traditional sense. But there wasn't much material in the book, certainly, that suggested that there was incorporation of elements from non-Christian sources. So is it eclectic, I guess, to a point, but maybe not, you know, incorporating, you know, bits of Buddhism and things like that? Or, you
know. Yeah, I think really the main energy of the movement, which is still relatively young, you know, I mean, it has precedents or antecedents in the 60s and Vatican II and the opening up of ecumenism and so forth. But then really the meat of the history starts in the 1990s. So we're not talking about a very old movement, really. But I think historically most of the energy has been taken up with the critique and the critique of evangelicalism and the critique of institutionalized Christianity. But included in that is the critique of how Christians have interacted with people of other religions.
Yeah.
So you get that coming out to some extent, but it's not, I don't think it's the main area where people have been spending their energy. They've been spending their energy in having deconversion experiences where they recover from what they would have experienced as the abuses of institutionalized Christianity, recovering from that, critiquing and trying to create something new. I wouldn't be surprised if in the coming years the engagement with other religions becomes more important, especially in the United States with the war on terror and the sort of Islamophobia that is sometimes present. And one of Brian McLaren's later books is something like Muhammad and Jesus and the Buddha Cross the Road, you know, so that's the beginning of an engagement, I think, with other religions. But at this point, that's not been the main energy and concern.
I'm aware that it's very difficult to even talk about this whole movement without sort of reifying it in some way as being a particular thing. So I'm lapsing into in my questions. It's just shows exactly how difficult it is. Sort of moving towards a form of conclusion, if we can have a conclusion. In terms of sort of broader impact, I mean, you know, what impact is this having? I guess you could say within more mainstream or evangelical forms of Christianity, you could have within society at large, and then academia would be the sort of the three prongs that I could see to answer that. So maybe if you could just offer some comments on those three prongs.
Right, well, I think Gerardo and I have a line in the book that it says it's one of the most important reframings of Western Christianity in our time, you know, or something like this. This all sounds very grand, you know, particularly for a movement which, you know, the numbers are very small when you look in terms of measuring, in terms of adherence and groups and so on and so forth. But we do see it as really important. Your first constituency, I guess, for lack of a better word, that you talked about, wider Christianity. There's plenty of evidence that the sorts of issues and conversations that have been raised by the emergence of the emerging church movement are impacting other expressions of Christianity. So the kind of major blowback or in terms of critique of the emerging church by evangelical Protestantism and the neo-reform movement, the fact that they have spent so much energy trying to critique the emerging church, I think indicates that, you know, it's seen as a threat and therefore is, you know, probably significant to that extent. And also significant to the extent that the type of religious orientation that we describe, this is present almost everywhere. You know, there are people sitting in congregations in probably nearly every Christian denomination in the West who would have the type of orientation that we describe in this book. They may not go to a pub church, but they are asking the same sorts of questions about the nature of God, the nature of truth, what it means to doubt, what's the relationship between doubt and faith. They see themselves on an individual spiritual quest, you know. So there are people everywhere that have this orientation. And we think that this orientation is one of the primary religious orientations in the modern West. So, you know, we talk about Ulrich Beck's idea of having a God of one's own. You know, it's almost like every emerging Christian has a God of one's own. yet at the same time, they seek out community and so forth. So that's why we see it as, I suppose, this important reframing of Western Christianity because it, I suppose, chimes so well with what it means to be religious in the modern West, and also because of the evidence in the way that it's affecting other expressions of Christianity. And I mean, I suppose in the UK, it's a different dynamic with the incorporation of some of these communities' fresh expressions within Anglicanism and Methodism. I think they have maybe a, I don't know, if a more civil dialogue or relationship might be the way to describe it as compared to the States, where maybe it's a bit more of a greater separation. So the first one was Emerging Church Impact on Christianity. Yeah. Then it was society at large. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one because we do talk in the book about how there's, you know, emerging Christians see kind of social justice, and you might even put it in the terms of left-wing political causes in some ways as important. And for them, you know, your faith is meaningless unless you're doing something out there in the real world. But as of yet, I mean, the jury is still out in terms of impact on wider society, I think. Mm. Again, like with your question about relationship to the other religions, there is sort of beginnings of seeing emerging Christians, I suppose, taking up the cause of LGBT issues, both in the States and in Northern Ireland, in the UK, and, you know, arguing from what they would, I suppose, in some cases see as a Christian perspective in the public sphere for, you know, meaningful inclusion, people of LGBT within Christian communities and so forth. But again, this is all very much in the beginning.
Yeah.
And the other thing that makes it difficult to measure impact in wider society is so many would see their activism in other spheres of social life as being played out through secular organizations.
Mm.
So, for instance, many of the people involved in ICON don't do their activism as part of ICON. They do their activism as part of the Belfast Feminist Network or some other group. You know? So it makes it really hard to measure. So are people inspired by this type of faith to become involved in secular social movements? Yes, they probably are, but how do you manage who gets the credit, right, in that evaluation? So Christianity Society, and then it was academia. Well, I mean, I suppose in some ways what we're trying to make an argument and what we're asking other academics to do is to consider ways in which religious movement that can't really be measured and evaluated in the standard traditional ways in the sociology of religion or religious studies are evaluated, to consider, you know, how significant this is. We're making a case that in the modern world, as it were, this is a really important way of being religious and should be taken seriously. And hopefully then that will be the case.
Yeah. Well, I know there was a whole bunch of stuff that we could have touched upon that we did. I said we were going to problematize the term emerging church, and we didn't even do that. Was there anything over the course of this that you were thinking, why is he not asking about this? Why isn't he asking about this? Anything that you were really itching to get off your chest, as it were?
Hmm. I think I'm good.
You think you're good?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was good too. and it's been interesting because I realized in over 100 podcasts, we haven't had a single one that's focused on ostensibly on something that would be labeled as Christian, which I think obviously reflects some sort of anxiety about, you know, trying to be like, we're religious studies, we're not theology. As I heard from the Irish Society for the Academic Study of Religion conference, there's a similar anxiety. So I'm glad that we've been able to finally sort of tick that.
Tick the Christian box.
As it were. Obviously, these things have come up in various other places, but I hope the listeners have enjoyed actually, you know, hearing something about what we are maybe so anxious about, because it is the dominant religious expression in the West, as it were. So I think we've been anxious to not be seen as just being the Christian Studies project, in a sense. So it's been nice to do that. And I saw a lot of parallels between the emerging church and the religious studies project as a form of emerging academia. So, yeah, it was very encouraging. So the book, Deconstructed Church, Understanding Emerging Christianity by Gerardo Marti and Gladys Ganiel, was published recently by OUP. And if you've liked this, get that and read a bit more. So thanks, Gladys.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview there. I'm Gladys Gagnon on the Emerging Church, and watch out for a good few more Christopher Cotter interviews to come over the coming months.
Absolutely. This week, we've got the pleasure of two responses are coming to this podcast. This is part of our playing with the format. You know, if numerous people take the bait of the interview and want to write a response, we are amenable to that. So we'll see how that goes this week. Kevin assures us that both are very good and take quite interesting different angles. Yeah. So one's from Travis Cooper and the other's from Catherine Moody. So we look very...
And all part of Kevin's continuing good work on managing the responses. He's taken the format and run with it, and all for the best, I think.
Absolutely, made it his own, and we now can sort of sit back and know that the responses are happening, and when we read the responses, we get
it the same way as everybody else does, which is fantastic.
It's great. Next week's a Jack interview.
Yeah, Jack Sonis, and this one is with Philip Almond on the subject of witchcraft and demonic possession in early modern England.
Mm-hmm. Building up a bit of a thread here.
Yes, in the coming months we've got a couple of interviews that I recorded at BASR building off the researching non-ordinary realities panels. So we recorded a roundtable featuring Fiona Barry, Bettina Schmidt, David Wilson, and our own Jonathan Tuckett, as well as an interview with David Wilson talking about his work on spiritualism. We're also hoping to have another interview on witchcraft and specifically the epistemology of investigating witchcraft and magic later in the year, but I haven't recorded that one, so yeah. I'm not going to announce it yet.
But it also ties in with Ronald Hutton as well, which we launched with last September.
Indeed, and we also we had the two panels that Jack Hunter recorded for us at Esalen last year as well on a similar subject. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a body of work here building up. This is the way that we're doing the threads now, rather than having them across 3 or 4 weeks. Rather, they're building up over time. And hopefully, eventually, we'll build up into a fairly considerable body of work looking at the same subject from a variety of different angles.
Another thing which could build into a large body of work, in about 9 or 10 days, David and I are going to the University of Chester, where we're entering uncharted territory in a sense. We're running a workshop on the digital humanities for their postgrad RS students, or TRS students, I think it is, at Chester. So, you know, showing them through a lot of the work that we've done on the project, you know, various aspects of how digital technology can help with research, networking, promotion, collaboration, and that sort of thing. And then we're also going to be recording an interview live as part of their seminar series leading into a roundtable discussion. So the interview is going to be on religious studies, or sorry, religion and literature. And then we're going to go into a roundtable on sort of narrative and reflexivity, place of the scholar and the author in the study of religion. So I think it's going to be a really good day. Watch the Facebook page, basically, because we're going to be appealing for some questions.
Yeah, so basically the idea is that in the morning we'll be presenting these techniques of using digital technologies in humanities research, collaboration and promotion. So we'll be asking people to contribute questions through the Facebook page, through Twitter, which we can then use in the recording. And the recording will then be put out on the digital medium through the Religious Studies Project. So it's almost like we planned it, isn't it?
Almost, yeah.
Other than that, though, we've rambled on a bit now. So let's just say, find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Google+, on iTunes. Always remember that the BASR are the greatest religious studies thing in the world.
Or at least the UK.
Definitely the UK, yeah. And other than that, Chris, thanks for listening.